Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional practitioner. I like to just say CFP, but our rules say we have to say CFP professional. On the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is August 21st, 2019. The markets were up today, the Dow closing at 26,202, the NASDAQ at 8,020, and the S&P at 2924. Our topic tonight is volatility in the market. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori C is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so we can hear you without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just give your question to Lori and she will write it down and bring it into the studio. Email is also available, as Norm mentioned, at yourfinancialchoices.com. My guest this evening is Tim Roof. He is a certified financial planner and a vice president and financial advisor at Valley National Financial Advisors. And Tim and I thought it might be a good time to take a deeper dive into the recent volatility in the market and discuss some of the attributes associated with volatility and market indicators worth watching. Kind of like a little educational lesson for all of us. So Tim, welcome back to the show.
Good evening. Thanks for having me again, Lori.
I didn't read your whole bio, but We've heard it before, so I thought let's just dive right in.
Perfectly fine. Let's go.
Okay. So let's start by talking about volatility and what that means historically, what it means today. And then, as I mentioned, let's look at some market data and some history on the market. I had read an article written in October of 2018 by Motley Fool, and it said in the 122 years since the Dow Jones began, five of the largest single-day point declines occurred in 2018. And for 2018 and 2019 to date, there have been seven of the largest declines in points. And this is where we need to differentiate some things. So I thought it would also be worth mentioning, if we're talking about declines, also about gains. So there have also been seven of the largest gains in points in the 2018 and 2019 year to date. So it's not our imagination, this volatility. We've seen single day point declines and single day point gains. But when we rephrase this and not look at the points, let's look at the percentages, the percent changes in declines or gains. 2018 and 2019 don't even hit the radar, according, and these are statistics that I found on Wikipedia. And the statistics for the S&P and the NASDAQ looked pretty similar. So let's talk about volatility and what is causing it, what drives the moments of volatility, because a lot of us can understand volatility. And I think for the most part, people understand that's part of the market. But what I think makes people a little bit crazy is what I'm going to call these moments of volatility, which are these intraday kind of swings that we've seen. So what do you think? Understanding the markets are volatile sometimes, but why are we seeing volatility in the day of trading?
Volatility can ordinarily be caused by uncertainty. And the market is forward-looking. So it's pricing in 6 months from now what is expected to occur. But then when we have items that come about that cause uncertainty to those pre-existing conditions that were once thought were going to occur, that's when the market can get into bouts of volatility, both to the downside or to the upside.
So traders in the market react on this change in information.
Yes, every day. And not even traders. There's program trading that's set up with algorithms to read news headlines and other things that are trading based on what's in news headlines or certain indicators that get tripped. So it's not just traders that are trading, but it's also the algorithms that traders have created.
Mm-hmm. So that speaks to where some of that volatility comes from. So what about for an individual investor's portfolio when they're seeing kind of all this volatility? How does that feel to them?
Well, sometimes it can be unnerving to some, especially if they just read the headlines and take that as the story for the day and don't anticipate what the effect that actually has on them in their own portfolio. Because the headlines are driven to cause some sort of emotion in many cases, to take action, likely. And in those cases, when you hear the news, sometimes you get the feeling that, things may not be going in the right direction. So that's affecting you and your portfolio or your personal situation. But sometimes it's just important to take a step back and understand, how you're allocated, how things are going behind the scenes, but before getting worried.
Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes investors, work with financial advisors, but you mentioned that sometimes it's algorithms that are making some of these trades in the market. Could individual investors be impacted by algorithms that someone could be using in their own portfolio?
Well, I would say individual investors don't necessarily always react to the day-to-day ongoings with the markets and trade. Most investors have a long-term portfolio established, and that long-term portfolio is supposed to allow them to ride through the ups and downs of the market turbulence without making, and hopefully it helps them avoid emotional decisions that could adversely affect them long-term. But for others,
who's doing the algorithm trading is what I'm.
You're talking about
institutions,
big institutions, hedge funds, corporations that are looking to take advantage in short term differences in valuations in the marketplace.
Okay, and take advantage of those individual investors who get scared to get out and
precisely those investors that do get spooked by the headlines.
Okay. One piece of data that the financial sector seems to be fascinated with is the yield curve. We hear about that all the time. Can you talk about that and its influence on the volatility?
So last week, the yield curve sent off a yield sign or an alert to the market observers when the two-year yield on the U.S. Treasury inverted above the 10-year yield on the U.S. Treasury. And why that sent off an alert sound to the observers was the fact that the five prior recessions all had the two-year inverting above the 10-year yield. So the market traded off about 3% in that given day. It's since recovered much of that since last Tuesday. But overall, because of the implications that has been a precursor to recessions in the past, it caused some concern during the trading week last week.
Okay, so the yield curve, and there's, I think, even a little bit more to talk about that and what that yield curve means, because people hear about it and they say, yeah, they kind of have some sense that it means something, but I don't know if they quite understand what the yield curve actually means. So I want to kind of get into that a little bit more deeper before we move on, because I think it's important to understand. And it helps put things in perspective for people. But we're coming up to our first break. So folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Rosalie.
And Steve.
Join us and other hosts each Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. for Swing Sunday, a great mix of swing, big band, and classic vocals.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and I have in the studio with me this evening Tim Roof, CFP and VP and Financial Advisor at Valley National Financial Advisors, and we are talking about volatility in the market and trying to get some understanding about volatility, what it means, what are people watching, why are we talking about it, why does it happen? So we were just mentioning the yield curve and how the yield curve recently inverted, though briefly, and how that caused some fluctuation intraday in the market. And one day you said we saw a 3% drop because people got spooked by this inversion. Number one, probably because that could mean a sign of recession, as you mentioned. But can we talk for a minute about the yield curve, kind of explain that a little bit and inversion a little bit more.
So the reason why it happens is mainly because expectations for short-term growth is higher than that of long-term growth. So that's why we may see the two-year yield rise above the 10-year yield. And I think this case is a little trickier this time around because of all the global central bank influence that we had have had over the last decade, and something along the lines of $15 trillion in global government bonds now are earning negative yields. So Germany has negative yields. Japan has negative yields on their bonds. So it's really hard to tell if it's a great indicator this time around, because there's a large flow of foreign funds coming into the U.S. to buy U.S. government bonds, which have a much more enticing yield than the negative yields being provided in by other countries' bonds.
Okay, so when we talk about enticing yield, so there's the yield on the short-term holdings and the long-term. So the inversion is we get a lower rate on the 10-year than the, let's say, the 2-year, and that's when we talk about inversion. And then the reason it's lower in the 10-year is because the expectation might be that they don't have, that investors don't have as much
confidence
in the long term. So that is like a little indication that something could be going awry in the markets.
Correct. So it's a thought then that recession could be looming.
Okay.
And even with this, the 2 and 10 year inversion, it's not to say that a recession happens tomorrow or 60 days from now or 6 months from now. Actually, looking back, the recession on average for the last 5 recessions hasn't occurred for another 22 months. And the S&P 500 return for the year following the original inversion on average was 12% return. It's not saying the recession's here. It's saying it could be coming in the future.
So I don't know if you have this off on the top of your head, but we saw this inversion for what, like a split second? I mean, it was like a day or two, right?
From what I remember, it was that morning.
Yeah.
And then by the end of day, it had reverted back.
Okay. So when we've seen the inversion prior to the last 5 recessions, do you have any idea how long that had lasted? Or is it?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay,
actually.
So I wonder if that would be any more of an indication. So that would be interesting to look at. So we've talked a little bit about the yield curve volatility and, you know, what causes some of that. Let's talk about the business cycle a little bit, because we do, when we're talking about recession, it's usually impacting businesses and consumers. So if we could talk a little bit about the business cycle, and does that feel different than past, you know, because we've been expanding for a long time. So a lot of times people will say, well, you know, this is one of our longest cycles. Usually a recession has happened by now, and oops, now the yield curve's inverting. Maybe this is the second, you know, indicator of that. But how much does that really, how does the business cycle work when we're looking at this?
So the economic cycles, you know, really driven by, in a lot of cases, growth and inflation. And we've had slow and gradual growth since the 2008 recession. We've also had very, very persistently low inflation. I believe because of those two characteristics of slow and gradual growth and persistently low inflation, it has allowed this economy to sustain this trajectory for as long as it has. And, you know, it, looking at the cumulative growth versus other prior business cycles going back to World War II, we're still cumulatively at the lowest growth during this economic cycle than all other economic cycles prior to this. So, you know, that could say that there's still room to run here. Yes, we might be in the later stages of this economic cycle, but there's still possibly room to run with this economic cycle as well.
So it could continue just still slow and steady like the tortoise.
Yep, slow and steady wins the race.
Slow and steady. And then and inflation could stay low as well.
But by the looks of it, it seems like inflation is going to remain below the Fed's targets for now. Commodities really aren't showing, you know, any inflationary pressures, and prices relatively aren't driving up even to the 2% level, even with the tariffs that have been imposed on China. So it's been impressive to see inflation be low, but it doesn't look like it's expected to pick up anytime soon right now.
Okay, so the business cycle, slow and steady. And I think that's really interesting that you said it's, even though it's been the longest, it still hasn't attained the same levels that we've seen in prior expansions. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and that's...
we know why?
I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we've had low inflation, low interest rates, and it's been called the new normal since the 2008 recession, slow growth and low inflation.
And do you think, though, that's because of the impact that we had in 2008, that there's more care in investments and infrastructure and consumer spending, and everyone's just being a little bit more cautious?
There's been additional regulation that has been brought about since the recession that has helped monitor who gets a loan and how much of a loan they receive. And it's also been, you know, now that folks have experienced the 2008 recession, people have been more conservative because mm-hmm. of that. And children of their parents have seen their parents suffer through it. So they are more cognizant of things and you know, more careful with their decisions, I think.
It's really interesting because I've met a lot of, you know, people in their early 30s who really live their lives differently than when I would say people in their 40s and 50s have, because I think they have seen their parents go through it and they're more careful about what they're spending. They're spending beneath their means. So it's going to be really interesting. But those kids who were born in 2008 aren't going to remember any of this. And so, well, actually, it'd probably be kids who maybe were born in 2000 and they're going to be coming into adulthood soon. So we'll see how that goes. I did just see something briefly. You mentioned that there was a lot of regulations and on borrowing and things like that too. And I can't quote this because I read pretty fast sometimes and don't always retain everything I read. But I think I saw that in 2021, some of those regulations are going to be relaxed as well. So we could see something bubble up if there isn't some kind of Band-Aid or modification on those. Now, this article did say that it is expected that while they're expected, these regulations are going to, I don't know if it was expire, but they expect that they would be modified to still kind of manage the lending policies, I believe. So lots to watch for, these little things that trickle up. Folks, we're at our second break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can ask questions live on air or off air. If you're not comfortable, you can give your question to Lori C. She can write it down and bring it in to us. It doesn't have to be about our topic tonight. It can be off topic as well. Again, phone number 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Sieber. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. Podcasts are also available at WDIY.org and YourFinancialChoices.com. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. We are talking about volatility in the market and some of the indicators we watch out for, what it means to have volatility in the market. All interesting stuff, and we're discussing it with Tim Roof, our guest, who's a certified financial planner. So, Tim, we've talked about volatility, we've talked about the yield curve, the business cycle. What other kinds of indicators should we pay attention to that, you know, so that we understand what could be sparking some of the volatility, and how do we kind of put it in perspective of what we're seeing? So what kind of other indicators?
There's dozens of indicators that you can follow to track the health of the economy overall. For example, the Conference Board's leading economic indicators has been followed by many market followers. The leading economic indicators by the Conference Board is really a summation of multiple economic data points and activity points. And when that shows that, you know, it's growing, you know, the economy is normally on solid ground. But when the leading economic indicators turn negative, that shows that the economy slowing could possibly be heading into a recession. And sometimes in the past, that has been a good precursor to when it turns negative, that a recession could be following that event when the leading economic indicators turn sour, so to speak. Other indicators that folks do follow is consumer sentiment, because in the U.S., the consumer drives about two-thirds of the economy, so it's always very important to follow what the consumer's doing and how healthy the consumer is. So consumer sentiment is one of those areas where you could follow how healthy the consumer is and how they feel towards their spending decisions and employment. And from that perspective, the consumer does drive growth, so you have to also watch unemployment claims. That could also be an indication that corporations are worried that the economy could be slowing down and that they have to lay off workers, and then that would obviously drive the consumer sentiment downward. So those are just a few items that you could monitor, or you know, you could monitor as a gauge for where the economy might be headed.
So when we're talking about consumer sentiment, you mentioned unemployment, and where are we with unemployment?
So unemployment's historically low right now at 3.7%. The Fed considers that a full employment level at this point of time. And from that perspective, things look pretty healthy for the consumer and employers.
And wages?
Wages, the last read was 3.3%. So we're seeing wages grow at about 3.3%. We're seeing inflation at about 1.5%. that's normally a pretty good formula for the consumer and the economy, because that means their wages are outpacing inflation, so their dollar goes further.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There was a New York Times article that I just addressed all of this, and it was August 17th, and it was by Neil Irwin. And he said that consumer spending accounts for more than two-thirds of the American economy. You might have mentioned that, versus about 14% for business investment. I thought that was really interesting, and I don't know if everybody, you know, kind of realizes that. Going back to thinking about the talk about the yield curve inverting and that changing the market for a day, yet there are so many different pieces that impact the economy and the markets. I don't understand how one thing that could happen affected the market that one day. It's really where you get the idea of either that the algorithm trading or emotional trading. Because if you're looking at all of these other things you just mentioned, jobs, unemployment, wages, I mean, consumer sentiment, it's all good. So it's sometimes a little surprising that one little blip like that has such an impact. It's just really fascinating to me. But back to that article about two-thirds of the American economy being driven by consumer spending, 14% for business investment, that article also said, and I'm going to paraphrase here, with consumers spending enthusiastically, they are driving overall growth. And you see it when I drive by the mall on my way home from work. It's crazy how packed the parking lot is. What might shift that sentiment? And what would we watch? Now, I know you mentioned, you know, unemployment and wages. So let's what else might shift that sentiment?
Well, right now, what has started to shift the sentiment a little bit is the uncertainty regarding trade policy with China. And the uncertainty there is, how long will this last, or will it get worse? And what do corporations do if it does last longer and if it does get worse? Because at some point, you know, corporations are they're paying more for goods from China that they use to make their products or provide their services. So it's possible they either have to absorb the costs, which would affect their earnings, or they have to pass on their costs, which then the consumer would have to, you know, bear with their paychecks and their income streams. So
we would see that in inflation then.
We would see that in inflation. But right now, I think corporations are doing their best job to absorb the costs at this point of time. And they're doing so and probably holding off on capital spending for the time period to absorb those costs for the time being. And that's one thing where the economy may be slowed down for now is on capital spending, because it's hard for corporations to make long-term decisions regarding investing capital when they do not know what trade policy will look like.
You know, I wonder too, if 2008 wasn't so long ago, that people, even if they may not be in the market, but hear the chatter and the worry about the trade and the cost of goods and how it might impact their job if they're the ones making the goods, working for those employers. When we talk about the tortoise and the hare, and we just said we're in a kind of a tortoise expansion, mm-hmm. It could be that we all still remember what happened in 2008, and even the consumer, while spending and having a positive sentiment about the economy, they still could be at a slower pace, meaning they're spending, but maybe not at the rates they were pre-2008.
I agree with that, because I've noted saving rates are fairly high during this this economic cycle. Saving rates have averaged, I believe, over 5% or so during the cycle, where in the past those saving rates had been lower. So I think folks know have taken a better stance towards saving and being cautious with their money.
Well, I even know as advisors, when I first started, you know, many years ago, we might have said a 3-month emergency reserve. And I basically tell folks all the time, like 6-month reserve now, typically. It kind of depends on a particular person's circumstances and mm-hmm. their fixed income coming in. But I even recommend those longer emergency reserves now, really because of what happened in 2008, for the most part. So we will continue our discussion with Tim Roof tonight, talking about volatility. If you have any questions The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori C. She's in the studio. She'll write it down and bring it into us, and we'll see what we can do to help you. Questions can also be sent through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to WDIY 88.1 Lehigh Valley Public Radio, your trusted source of NPR news, community affairs, and diverse music since 1995, serving the Lehigh Valley for 25 years. Your Lehigh Valley weather currently, it's 87 degrees. Showers and thunderstorms are likely tonight, mainly before 10 p.m. There's still a thunderstorm watch out, so be careful if you're out. Some of the storms could produce gusty winds or heavy rain. A low will be around 69. Thursday, chance of showers and thunderstorms after 1 p.m., patchy fog before 7 a.m., otherwise partly sunny, high near 87. Thursday night, showers and thunderstorms likely once again throughout the night, so you want to just be aware. Low around 66. Friday, again, a slight chance, about 40% of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny. High is a little bit less. It's near 78, so it's getting a little cooler, which is kind of nice. And then slight chance of showers in the evening with a low around 58. And Saturday and Sunday promise to be mostly sunny, highs near 80, and lows in the evening near 60. Pretty good stuff. We now return to Your Financial Choices with your host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Norm. Welcome back, folks. Again, I'm speaking with Tim Roof, a CFP and advisor at Valley National Financial Advisors. We are discussing volatility in the market and some of the influences on that. Tim, we were talking about the consumer really driving the economy. Two-thirds of the American economy is driven by consumer spending, and they've been feeling pretty good lately, a little bit of a dip maybe in the past month or so, but feeling pretty good for the most part. And the business business community provides about 14% to the American economy. So what I'm sitting here pondering as we're talking is businesses, if they're nervous or they're pulling back or they're holding back, if that starts impacting, that could eventually impact our little consumers, right? If there's unemployment, if they start laying off, they don't start, you know, produce products. So let's talk about the corporate sentiment right now, because that corporate sentiment is certainly going to lead when we talk about leading indicators. Is there some measure of corporate sentiment that we could follow? Because that could be a leading indicator of the consumer sentiment, which then could be a leading indicator of the recession.
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
potential.
You could follow capital spending by corporations. That could be an indicator to see how confident the corporations are with investing their capital for the long term to reap returns in the future. And I think we've seen some restraint from corporations here near term. I think we saw, you know, a pickup in 2017 and 2018 of capital spending, and now we've seen a bit of a pullback here in 2019. Some of that might have to do with the uncertainty regarding trade policy as well. And we've also seen a pickup in share buybacks from
that's
corporations.
What I was wondering. So, does that mean?
Well, they're deciding that that's a better better way to use their capital than to, you know, invest in other strategies currently.
They're buying back their own shares.
Buying back their own shares to pay back the shareholders, obviously, for shareholder value. Mm-hmm. And they feel that's a better investment right now in some cases than putting that money to work in other ways. And I think some of that might have to do with, you know, some of this uncertainty that we talked about with trade.
Okay. So let's say the trade uncertainty gets, you know, they come up with some kind of a trade deal and these corporations now want to spend again. Do they, where do they get the money if they bought back all their shares?
Well, first off, they have it on their, many companies have it on their balance sheets. They already have it set aside to spend. They just haven't decided to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Other companies have decided to use the low rate environment to add debt to their balance sheet, to then use that to reinvest to return higher returns than what the debt costs them. So those are, you know, two ways that corporations can decide to use their capital, use their balance sheet to continue to drive business growth and capital spending. And I would probably expect to see some more capital spending if we did have a resolution regarding trade, because companies can once again, you know, make those long-term decisions without haste.
Mm-hmm. And corporate sentiment, this is some... corporations aren't all based on trade either. There are corporations that provide other services, even domestically, you know, financial institutions.
Sure. I mean, the small businesses aren't as affected by this. But, you know, when we're talking about, you know, the multinational companies, those are the companies that have revenue streams outside of the U.S. borders, where they can be more affected than some of the smaller businesses here that we all support in our local communities.
So let's talk about debt for a minute. So do you have any idea where we are with debt from a corporate debt perspective, or even the consumer debt perspective, and what the implications of that would be? So.
Well, corporate debt has been rising over this economic cycle. It's at higher levels at this point in time, but it's also still manageable because the low rate environment that we've had. So as long as we don't see a recession or have a recession, it's likely the amount of corporate debt would be problematic at this point of time. But it's possible it could become problematic if the economy were to unexpectedly slow.
Well, I guess if the corporations that were taking on the debt were impacted by trade, or because, again, there could be corporations that are taking on corporate debt that might be just taking advantage of the interest rates and have revenue streams that aren't affected by trade. Again, I just kind of think financial, and I'm sure there are others, too. I just can't think off the top of my head. So they're really taking advantage of the low rates, and that could be beneficial to them.
It can. Think of it, if a corporation can borrow at 2 or 3% in this environment and turn that capital over and make 7 or 8% on it, to them it can be worth taking that risk. For the growth that they can achieve from borrowing those funds, where ordinarily they may not have those funds to try to earn those additional revenue streams.
And they could be keeping those investments on their books as assets that they could turn over if they ended up having to you know, pay off that debt as well.
Exactly.
And I mean, it could literally be investments on their books, not investments in capital or building a building. It could be literally in the market themselves.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. cash on their books as well.
Mm-hmm.
And from a household standpoint, the households right now seem to be in pretty good shape. I mean, I think households now net worth is at all-time highs, so people are feeling confident because of that. And also the debt service, which is the debt payments as a percentage of our disposable personal incomes, is still relatively at a good level historically. At this point in time, the debt service ratio, this was actually in the first quarter of 2019, was at 9.9%. When we went into the 2008 recession during the fourth quarter of 2007, that debt service ratio was 13.2%. So we have a long way to go to get there. And that has a lot to do with the fact, again, this low rate environment has kept those interest costs down.
Can you explain to me what debt service ratio means?
So debt service ratio is basically how much of
your disposable
income is absorbed by debt payments.
Okay. And so right now, in the first quarter, it was about
9.9%. Which has been basically the average since about 2012 now, which is relatively low.
Now, does that include mortgage debt?
Yes.
So it's that makes
mortgage, credit cards, personal loans.
Yeah. And 2008, what level were we at?
13.2%.
Okay. I don't know where mortgage rates were in 2007 compared to where mortgage rates are now. I wonder if it's in part that, like the cost of the
I think interest rates are somewhere, you know, on bank accounts or on cash, money markets were probably in around the 5% range at that time. So mortgages were probably in the 6 or 7.
Okay. So some of those percentages could be that difference as well. Not just that we're better about the debt that we have on our books, but that the debt isn't costing us as much today.
Yeah. Folks that had mortgages back in, you know, mid 2000s have all refinanced.
Yeah.
Because of this low rate environment. So they might have went from an 8% mortgage down to a 3.5% mortgage. So that all, that savings adds up.
Since we just said that, and we suspect that the Fed could reduce rates maybe once again, maybe twice again. I know this is going slightly off to our topic of volatility, but since we're talking about refinancing, what do you say to folks who might think about refinancing right now? I mean, because I've seen some folks come in with loans that are at like 4.25.
Yeah, with rates coming down over the last 6 months the way they have now, you know, around this time would be a good time to look at what your interest rate is and see if it makes sense to refinance.
Do they wait to see if rates come down again?
It's hard to say. I don't. 1 to 2 rate cuts, when you're talking about it from that perspective, a lot of that's actually already priced into the market.
Okay.
So it's really hard to tell how much of a much more of a material effect further that those 1 or 2 rate cuts will actually have on mortgage rates.
Okay. So do you know, again, I'm kind of asking you this off the top of your head, where mortgage rates are now for, let's say, 15 or 30 year loans? On a refi, which might be different than a first.
Yeah,
than
I'm thinking a 30-year loan might be around probably 3.5 to 3.75 at this point of time, depending on the bank and your credit rating.
Yeah, okay. 15-year, do you have?
15 years in the 3.2%, 3.25, maybe up to 3.5.
Okay. So it especially for people who might have not been able to refinance back. I mean, think about it. 2008 was only 11 years ago. Some people couldn't refinance because they were upside down on their mortgage, or they owed more than, or sorry, their home wasn't worth as much as their mortgage. That could have turned around because we right now homes are harder to find. There's a bigger demand for homes, less inventory out there. So if you went and had your home appraised now, you might be on the other side of it and actually could possibly be eligible for a refi.
That's a great point. And 11 years ago, your incomes might have come up now and your credit score might have gotten better and you might be able to obtain better credit and better interest rates because of your better credit.
Right. So this is really a time where kind of folks should pull out those mortgage statements and really look at them. And that helps consumer sentiment, too, because then, again, if they refi and they have a lower rate, they might have more money in their pocket, or they could refi from maybe a 20-year loan now, because if we're talking 11 years out, or maybe it's a 19-year loan left, maybe they have 18 years left, they could refi at a lower rate to a 15-year mortgage.
Yeah, and save a lot more in interest
over the term. Yeah, I like that. I like that. So for anyone out there, make sure you're looking at those statements. It's on there, and it's surprising how many people don't know what rate of interest they're paying on their mortgages. And typically, it's right there on your statement every month. I don't know if there's any providers out there who don't put it on the statement, but it's on there. And if it's not on there, you can certainly call or do a little old-fashioned math on your calculator and figure out what rate of interest you're paying, because now might be a time to look that up. And I'm sure there's plenty of banking institutions out there that are looking to grab your business as well. Folks, we are up on our last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just call and give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it into us. There's still plenty of time. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion and do a little wrap-up of what we've been talking about with Tim Roof shortly after this break.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Not only is becoming a WDIY member a great way to support the programs you love, it has its benefits. WDIY members have access to our weekly member ticket giveaway emails. Discover great concerts, theater performances, film screenings, and more, all while supporting the many choices and real voices on WDIY. Make your gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 7 or wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and I have Tim Roof with me this evening. We're discussing a volatility in the market and related topics around that. Tim, I guess we should keep in mind with all of what we've talked about so far this evening, the statistics, the indicators, the sentiment, that even if there is a recession, which is why I thought you actually had the idea for the show tonight to talk about volatility, which I think was a good idea, that even if there is a recession, it doesn't mean it's going to look like what we saw in 2008 or even with the tech bubble in 2000. And I think it's important to talk about that because we hear recession, people think it's a bad word, and those of us who remember say, oh my gosh, 2008, oh my gosh, the tech bubble. And whenever someone's talking about recession, that's what they're referring to. But it doesn't have, it's not always like that.
Yeah, not all bear markets are alike. It's not a one size or fits all type of recession or bear market when that occurs. Because bear markets can be caused by a myriad of things. Recession is just one of them. Bear markets, and what I mean by bear market is when the stock market drops by 20% or more, can be caused by commodity prices increasing and inflationary pressures rising because of commodities. Could be caused by valuations, or think of the tech bubble back in 2000 when the tech area and valuations in the stock market got increasingly high, became overvalued, and that bubble bursts. It could also be driven by the Fed. The Fed has caused bear markets in the past where they've increased rates too quickly and they've choked off borrowing in the economy, which, you know, hit the consumer and then choked off investing and, you know, caused the economy to also go into recession at times in the past. So there's multiple reasons that could cause a recession. And there's, 2008 was a, you know, sometimes I would call a bit of an anomaly when you think of the peak to trough being 58% where the market dropped from peak to trough.
So that's a little scary.
It is scary. It's unnerving. And but now, you know, I would say if a recession does come in the future, it would be more of a run-of-the-mill recession versus one of those harsher recessions like we saw in 2008, because at this point, it's noted that the financial imbalances aren't there in the economy like they were back in 2007 prior to the financial recession occurred. So just be mindful that, every economic cycle normally ends in a bear market and a recession, but they're not all the same depth as far as, you know, what the market retraces.
Not the depth nor the same period of time.
Right. Yeah. Correct.
So let's talk about a minute. 2000, we had the tech bubble. lots of folks were heavily invested in tech. That was, oh boy, that was like the place to go. And if you weren't in it, it was just amazing. And you hear the stories about these young startups of these tech companies selling them for, you know, $1 billion, and they lived their life happily ever after. But all of a sudden, it came crashing down. In 2008, we had the real estate boom. So for folks who aren't chasing the next boom, how can they weather the impact of a recession, whether it's short or prolonged? Because I think the people who really feel that, in my mind, looking back to 2000 and 2008, the people who really felt that were the people who were chasing those, what do you call it, those packages. So what would you say?
Take a step back and take a look at where you are in achieving your goals and what you need to do in order to accomplish your goals, and look at your asset allocations and your saving strategies and how that all interrelates with one another, so that you have a portfolio position to weather the storm if a storm were to occur. And you also have a portfolio that's going to, you know, meet your return goals, and also a portfolio that won't make you emotional or unnerved when things do underperform or turn volatile.
So you're not putting all your eggs in one basket. But, you know, in 2000, when people were kind of chasing that tech, and in 2008, you know, everyone was getting into real estate and trying to flip and do residential real estate, and it was kind of crazy. Do you sense that there's any of that going on right now? Is there any, like, you hear about people talking about cannabis stocks, and, you know, I don't know if that's something people are chasing. Do you see that, like we saw that before?
At this point, I'm not seeing it.
So that could be also an indication that this might not be the same as what we've seen in the past.
There's still a lot of cash on the sidelines, and there's still a lot of money flowing into bonds. And equities haven't seen the same amount of inflows that bonds have seen, and cash has remained relatively stable. Actually, this year we've seen a lot of money flow into cash again. So we haven't seen that euphoria like we saw, you know, prior to the 2000 tech bubble. And valuations aren't frothy like the levels like they were going into the 2000 tech bubble, where, you know, would be eye-opening now at this point in time. So from that perspective, you know, the valuations seem fairly reasonable.
Okay. So you had mentioned people, you know, have a little bit in cash, bonds, you know, a diversified portfolio, so that you're not, you know, you're not feeling every little piece. So if people realize they're not 100% invested in the market, you know, because they have some in cash, some in bonds, some in equities, we hear every day, oh, the market's down these points, it's down this percentages. When we're hearing that, it's typically they're talking about the Dow Jones, the S&P, or the NASDAQ. But if they have a diversified portfolio, they're not experiencing those same kind of returns that is all we hear about in the news and everything. So what type of indices, or is there a rule of thumb that one might watch to understand the impact the market might have on their own portfolio? So you'll hear people say, oh, I'm 60-40. And again, we know that deep dive, that could be any number of different kinds of allocations to different sectors and asset classes and things like that. But 60-40 broadly might be like 60% equities, 40% bonds. They are not going to feel, if someone says the market's down 3% today, that doesn't mean their portfolio's down 3%. So is there something else that people can kind of pay attention to or understand that they're not experiencing that volatility the way we see it and hear about it every day?
And before I jump into this, can I go back to that cash topic that you talked about and you know, having a appropriate allocation? You know, one thing that's always good to have is an emergency reserve, which I didn't note previously. You know, emergency reserve, if you're working, 3 to 6 months of your living expenses, closer to six if you have, you know, children, is always good to have on in case an unforeseen unemployment event were to occur. That way you can get through that time period until you land back on your feet. For those that are retired, 6 months to maybe a year or two could be an appropriate emergency cash reserve and savings accounts or CDs, you know, something earning a decent yield in today's environment. That way, you know, you won't get emotional with some of your longer term investment decisions that you have, because you always know that you have this cash reserve on hand for the rainy day, so to speak, or to allow your portfolio to recover if something adverse were to happen.
Because you're not pulling out if the market's down, because you don't have to pull it out when the market's down, because you have your emergency reserve.
Because you have your emergency reserve to rely on, which then gives you the time for your portfolio to recover if and when the markets underperform.
Okay.
And the markets can move fast. I mean, we look at corrections, and corrections can recover in 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it happens fast. So overall, that's why, you know, having that emergency reserve savings on the sideline is important. That way you don't have to worry about what's going on in the day-to-day marketplace, because you're in good shape.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so with a diversified portfolio, what kind of indicator might someone tell me, back to, if the market drops 3% in one day and I have a 60-40 portfolio, could have some other version, I'm just saying, we wouldn't expect to see a 3% drop in a 60-40 allocation. I'm just using this as an example. Tell me why.
Because when you're in a 60-40 allocation, it normally means you're invested in about 60% stocks, the growth assets, which are tied to what's going on in the market in some way, shape, form. And then you have 40% in cash and bonds, which tend to act as a ballast. What I mean by that is, you know, when stocks underperform, money flows into bonds, and bonds tend to perform well, and vice versa. When the stock market's performing well, money flows into stocks, stocks perform well, and bonds don't perform as well. So, you know, when the market trades down in that given day, if you have a 60-40 portfolio, you shouldn't be feeling or seeing your portfolio drop the same amount as the stock market is. You might only experience 60% of that capture, maybe 50% of that capture, because the bonds performed well within the portfolio.
Okay. So if the market, those indices that we talked about earlier, is down 40%, and you're only in 60% equities, you should see 60% of that 4% drop. But, a rule of thumb.
That's a good rule of thumb. And as far as indicators, you asked me what indicators might be useful. For the U.S. stock market, many use the Dow Jones or the S&P 500. I tend to like the S&P 500 a little bit more because it's a more broad index. For a global index, the MSCI, the Morgan Stanley Capital Index, and then it's the ACWI is the acronym, but it's the All Country World Index, Morgan Stanley Capital Index, All Country World Index, it's called.
Okay.
And so those can be some equity indices. And then the Bloomberg Barclays Ag is sometimes known as a good benchmark for bond investors.
Okay, so the return on either of those kind of combined might give you a better idea of how your portfolio might react. So it's just kind of understanding it. I think it's just important for people to understand. We have like a minute left. Any comment on the tariff or the trade negotiations?
I would say both sides are probably motivated to get something done. When will it happen? Could it be towards the end of the year this year, early next year? Possibly. It's hard to say what the timeline is, but I would say the U.S. and China both have motivation to get a trade deal inked and struck and move forward from here to get back to, you know, a global economy and allow, you know, global investing to continue to run its course.
Okay. So We'll watch next several months. Could be sooner, could be a little bit later. So even into early next year, it might not happen before the end of the year?
It's possible. So back to the show's topic, volatility, we may continue to see some volatility until we have more certainty surrounding this event.
So then if they end up having some trade agreement, who says that's locked in stone? I mean, could either party get out of that?
Oh, sure. That can be changed at any point
of
time.
Yeah, that would make me nervous too. Tim, what's the phone number where people can reach you if they need to?
610-868-9000, and my extension's 113.
610-868-9000. Tim, thanks so much for bringing this topic to my attention, and thank you for coming on. I know you're a very busy guy, so I appreciate you really coming on. Coming up next week, we're going to have investment decisions, tax decisions. So what I want to talk about there is, are you paying attention to your taxes as they relate to your investment decisions and what that means? So we're going to do that next week. I want to thank our listeners this evening, and I want to thank Lori for being here. Thank Norm for being here and covering, and Tim Roof for visiting us and sharing all of his great insights. I really appreciate it. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.